What's the phrase? Ignore the man behind the curtain. All right, we're just going to get started. It's time. So I want to welcome you to the 50th annual membership meeting of the Mulch and Soil Council. Again, I'm Bob Lagasse, Executive Director, and I'll be the MC for the business meeting. First thing we want to do again is thank our sponsors, because we can't thank them enough. And it's a sin not to express your appreciation for those that are helping you. So thank you to our diamond sponsors, AgriCoding, for sponsoring the pens and pads, and ColorBiotics for the badges and lanyards, to our platinum sponsors for Social Marks Media, for tomorrow night's President's Reception, and Vermeer for tonight's opening reception and exhibit, which is going to be in the room over here on the left side of the balcony. Our gold sponsors, including Maverick Environmental Equipment for the handy meeting bags, and Invinia for last night's Meet the Board of Directors event. And our silver sponsors, Chromascape, Faltec, GH Glennon, and Reliance Packaging, for sponsoring our great meeting breaks. And thank you, Reliance, for sponsoring this recent break this afternoon. Now it's my pleasure to call the President, Jim Weber, to the podium for his President's Report.
Most of my president's report I covered earlier today when I spoke, but some of the other issues that our industry is going to be facing quite extensively throughout the nation is pallet shortage. I don't know if any of you have experienced that so far, and it's regional from area to area. And what to do about that? What to do about a pallet shortage? And certainly we've been on the phone. A year ago we were $3.50 a pallet. Now we're as much as $8 a piece. And if your business participates in any way in the yard waste aspect of mulch production, we've actually started producing pallets out of sawn lumber, out of the logs that come in through the yard waste that comes into our facility. And not by design, we felt like we were forced to do it. Certainly there's a big demand of pallets. I'm 3 miles away from half a dozen pallet manufacturers around me, but I'm also very close to a lot of Amazon warehouses and the Rickenbacker warehouses over there that just gobble them up just as fast as you can. So for us, just quite simply, we just bought a Wood Miser sawmill, portable, and some Go Fast processing equipment, and some baker equipment, and we've got a assembler machine coming here in December, and for a cost of about less than $3.50 a pallet, we're able to produce brand new pallets out of yard waste. And so for us, thinking outside the box, an alternative method or way for us to achieve the product. But why is there such a shortage? The housing market's high demand, taking it, the cost of lumber. Normally a pallet manufacturer is going to pay somewhere around 40 cents per thousand, 40 to 55 cents per thousand board foot for lumber. Right now, they're paying as much as $1.03. So at $1.03 per board foot, there's roughly 10 board feet in a pallet. And if you don't know what a board foot is, it's 1 foot by 1 inch by 1 foot. And if you divide the pallet up, how many board feet there are, there's about 10 board feet. So if you're paying $1.03, you're paying $10.30 just for the raw material, plus the nails, plus the labor to assemble it. Before you know it, you've got $12, $13 a pallet into it. So by processing the raw material yourself, certainly cuts your cost down immensely. As far as the trucking industry goes, what we have done was we've rented or purchased as many automatic transmission trucks that we could. Today's generation, the new drivers under 30 years of age or younger, they seem to have just the automatic transmission endorsement, which means they're not allowed to drive a stick shift. Even though they may know how, when they took their test, they didn't get the manual transmission capability, they just got the automatic transmission endorsement. So, but that even became a scarcity. So renting from Ryder Trucks, Fleetmaster Leasing in Columbus, and name a couple of others, Aero Truck Sales purchasing them, the amount of rental equipment that was out there this year just became more and more scarce, to the point where we couldn't even pick up a day cab truck anymore. The only thing that we were able to pick up was sleeper trucks. Now trying to do a local delivery to a gas station with a sleeper truck and a 48-foot flatbed isn't the most ideal thing to do, but sometimes you don't have a choice. So, looking at your business, where you're located, if trucking is going to be an issue and you think you're going to have to rent or purchase more, I'd probably start that process now. Just like before, Volvo said, even if you wanted to buy a brand new truck from us today and spec one out, it's over a year out. You get on machine or truckpaper.com. I don't know how many of you have ever been on there. The amount of trucks for sale today is 1/3 less than it was a year ago. And certainly some of the cream puffs that are out there for sale, you wouldn't want to buy anyways. Certainly our industry is facing a lot of labor issues, transportation issues, raw material issues, freight out of China, believe it or not, nails to make a pallet. The majority of the nails that are produced or manufactured come from China. So, load of freight coming out of China to go from 6,000 to 26,000, it's certainly hitting the bottom line quite a bit. That's where we are. Hopefully, if you have any questions, hey, I'd like to make my own pallets or something like that, just feel free to hit me up and I'll tell you what we did. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Next on the agenda is the treasurer's report. With the treasurer's permission, I'll review the audited report from our independent CPAs, Carr, Riggs, and Ingram for last year, which was approved by the board of directors in April of this year. This is a consolidated report, includes both the foundation, the Mulch and Soil Research Foundation, and the Mulch and Soil Research, or Mulch and Soil Council. The foundation is at a low activity because over the last 3 years it's completed several major projects on Prop 65 exposure numbers and on debunking the myth of spontaneous combustion of mulch and soils in garden and landscape uses, which the fire departments keep saying that we're to blame for unknown mysterious fires that occur in residential and garden applications, which we have proven statistically cannot happen. But we'll talk about that a little later. Right now, we have on our balance sheet 605,000 in cash and equivalents, accounts receivable of $39,000, $5,000, restricted cash, which is the residual of one of the foundation projects that we're in the process of completing this coming year, for total assets of $650,676. We have accounts payable of $14,000. We have deferred revenues for billed for membership dues, and the auditor accounts for dues in the calendar year. So if you join in June, we get the credit for June to December, but we don't get from credit. We have to defer January to May. And that's what that is. The deferral is anything beyond the current year that brings your dues into the coming year. And that's $236,000. And membership fees, we have unrestricted net access assets of $399,000, bringing us back to $650,000 in liabilities, income and assets and liabilities. Our income statement comes basically from dues, 46%, annual meeting, 19%, certification, 37%, and advertising, 2%. Most associations, the dues represent 75 to 80% of their income, and the meetings generally balance out the rest. So we're blessed in that we're not totally relying on dues, but we're very stable in our membership. So the good news is our annual meeting was $102,000 in a pandemic when no one else was having face-to-face meetings. Our advertising was $8,900. Our certification was $193,000. Our dues were $223,000. And our interest was $1,168 for a total revenue of $530,006. Our expenses, most of our expenses are, according to the auditor, program-related expenses, 83%. And our admin and overhead only runs at 17%. The real numbers on that, our certification is $148,000, meetings and seminars $84,000, member support $115,000, and G&A $92,000 for a total of $440,000 and net revenue last year of $89,000. Anybody have any questions? Is there a motion to approve the treasurer's report? Randy Tyer made a motion. Steve Liffer, second. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you. We spent the last year counting only negative votes because you couldn't see the audience. So this is an improvement. All right. Our members, for our 50th annual meeting, we're reporting our membership as 20 Category A, 26 Category B. These are all producer members. Category A through G are producers. B is 26, C is 16, D is 5, Category E is 4, Category F is 1, and our largest dues-paying members, we have 3. Our affiliate members. Affiliates provide equipment. Associates provide services. So our affiliates are 31, our associates are 2, our nonprofit members are 3, for a total of 111 members. We were 108 companies. Now, our membership roles are larger than that because we have multiple extra participation from many companies. So if you have someone, the plant manager, that you want to receive the newsletter, et cetera, you can add him at no additional cost. You just have to tell us who it is, and we'll put him on the mailing list, but you only get counted once. Our meeting attendance is out of date, I understand, as of this morning. We had coming here, and as of yesterday, 75 producer members, 60 affiliate associate members, 18 non-members, 11 staff members, and 2 press. And that 166 is now 173. Our record is 174. And that was... That was San Antonio in 2019. Prior to that, it was Nashville in 2 years prior at 172. So this is the second largest meeting in 50 years. Thank you for your participation and your support. This is an outstanding organization and really good members. And I'd like to address some of the program activities that we've done in the last year. Jim Weber mentioned a lot of these this morning, so I'm just going to quickly give you some backfill on some of the activities. Like after the last annual meeting, we were approached by NIST, National Institute of Standards and Technology, the Office of Weights and Measures. We found that we had a problem in 2020, that since the state inspectors couldn't go out and do training, that a lot of the training data and some of the results that we were getting, and if you ever fail a test and you question it, send it to me, and we'll look into whether or not it's accurate, because we can tell mathematically if they're doing something seriously wrong, and we could tell that three states were seriously wrong. Just from the math on the form. They weren't following the proper procedures, they weren't doing the proper protocols. And we approached the states, and two of them admitted it. That's good. One we're still discussing that with. But NIST, because of that, asked us to join with them to develop online video training. And we came up with six video segments that covered a full range from what's covered under the NIST regulations for standardized testing of volumetric filled mulches and soils up through labeling, up through the actual test protocol, and then the mathematics that go into pass-fail. So there are six segments. We're the first association that they ever did that with. We're still the first association that they've ever done that with. It's been a fairly good success. Because we're monitoring how the participation goes. We used this program in December last year for our own training, and we had 100 participants online that went through the Weights and Measures training in this joint program that were all industry. We've had about another 80 go through it that are state officials that we can track. So that's a very successful program, both for industry and for us. We're pleased that we had a good relationship with NIST to be able to jointly develop that. We also represent the council at the APCO meetings, which is the Association of Plant Food Control Officials, where we discovered last year that there was no actual official definition of quarin, since many of you are using or developing quarin in your new products. In order to have it on your label, you have to have an acceptable definition. So that became an issue, and we petitioned APCO to with a definition for coir. There were several other definitions that were offered for things like buffered coir and et cetera, but after several meetings, we were able to get the acceptance of the definition of coir, and that is now official. It became tentative first of the year, and it became official this last go-around. And then we have new and expanded state legislative and regulatory activities. We've changed over our monitoring to with a company called Contexture AI, and it's an artificial intelligence system that we have been working to program to look for state regulations and state legislation that's in the hopper in all 50 states that might impact either positive or negatively on our industry. So there's a lot of bills that are going in. It was a little slow last year because legislatures in 2020 didn't meet in person. They slowed down a bit, but it picked up again this year. And we expect in November we're going to be issuing more monthly notices. So if you get a notice about what's going on in various states, and these are just opportunities for you to look at legislation that may impact you. And if you have a feedback or you want some more information, let us know and we'll dig into it a little more. We typically don't go too deep into state issues unless the state issue has the potential to become a national issue. It's going to spread. and in that case, we'll take it up as a national issue. But we also, doing this, we use that system to identify an issue that came up with the state of Ohio this year, where they were going through a five-year review of the weights and measures regulations and wanted to remove from the regulations, and I don't know why they would want to do this, all references to NIST handbooks 44 and 130 for their training officials. And our fear was if they take out that reference, then in next generations of officials, since it wasn't referenced, they'll say, well, we're not bound by NIST. And NIST is the only thing that makes the regulations uniform across all states, so we're not dealing with 50 different state regulations. So we petitioned all the members, and particularly members doing business in Ohio, to respond to this. We got a very good response from the membership. Thank you so much for your quick response, because this came on a very short trigger. And we kind of filled their hopper for the Department of Ag to dissuade them from taking it out and encourage them to even improve on it, because we don't want any state straying from a national uniform standard that would hurt our industry. We did, well, that was the Ohio thing. We did a transportation committee. We did, in earlier in the year, support the National Trucking Relief Act, and the members were very responsive to our call to write to your congressmen and senators to support this legislation. At the same time, we were working very heavily with Federal Motor Carrier Safety Commission on declaring mulch and soil an agricultural commodity, which they did not do, but they defined it such a way that horticultural products are declared now agricultural commodity, and anything that supports a horticultural anything that supports an agricultural commodity is now a farm supply. So we turned out to be, this was our fallback position in dealing with FMCSA, we turned out to be declared a farm supply, which alleviates us from all hours of service regulations during our high season in the city, during the planting season. So if you can get a trucker to work, he's not limited. You can work. You're not limited to 11 hours driving time. You're not limited to a 14-hour day. None of Part 395 under HOS regulations applies to our industry, and that's a major improvement. But because it came so late in the year, it was very confusing coming straight on our season. So we issued letters to all the members to clarify what the FMCSA final interim regulation was all about, and we did a letter for truck drivers who got stopped that explained to anybody who stopped them what the new regulation was, and with references so they could check it quickly and let our guys go on. The Standards Committee monitored the an issue that came up with Minnesota, University of Minnesota and Minnesota DNR, having to do with jumping worms. This is a national issue, but it has regional emphasis in the north central, with particularly with Minnesota, even though the jumping worm is an East Asian invasive species that exists in the south, the southeast, the east, the northeast. It's been here for a long time, but it's become a public issue in the north central, particularly Minnesota, and it's got the attention of Minnesota DNR, who is considering whether or not they would regulate it as an invasive species that would be subject to litigation and control and penalties and fine if they find that you're selling mulch or soil products that contain jumping worms. There was an article on this in the August newsletter that gave the background on it and a policy statement that the board, the standards committee and the board worked out, that basically demonstrates that the likelihood of having these products, these species in an in a processed mulch or wood product or a soil product giving the temperature, the processing temperatures that exceed 104 degrees that would kill the sea pods of these jumping worms, so it's not likely that we would be a spreader of these invasive worms. And that information, if you don't have access to the newsletter, et cetera, then you can also find it in a statement on our website under Consumer Frequently Asked Questions. It's part of a series of termites, et cetera, and we just added it to that. We're monitoring what's happening because we don't know what DNR is going to do, but we've got members watching it, will be watching it, and we'll be working with representatives of Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association to keep track of this thing because we'd rather get it corralled before than after. It's hard to chase them down after. Certification committee, we did do two significant things. Working with NIST, the issue came up on a rule called largest whole measure. And it says that you have to label your product in the quantity statement in the largest whole measure unless you're labeling in accordance with accepted trade custom. Okay, so largest whole measure, if you've got a quart measure, anything above 25.6 quarts is supposed to go to cubic feet because cubic feet is the largest whole measure above a quart. But we've got a lot of products out there that are 64 quarts, 36 quarts. We've had them out there for decades. And we have measures now recently for many years that are like 1 cubic feet. And now we're getting down to 0.75 cubic feet, 0.5 cubic foot measures, et cetera. And those would, under NIST rules, require to be shifted to quarts. But there's reasons that we're doing this, and it was all written up in a statement for the certification committee that passed SUIP 5, 6, and 7 that had to do with quart measures above a cubic feet and fractional measures of cubic feet below 1 cubic feet. And then we documented that as a trade custom on paper, and then we had it published. Our good friends at the Soil and Mulch Producer News documented it and published it. So being published, now we can point to that and say that's trade custom. And we did that because we didn't want NIST telling us what our trade customs are. So that was preventative, very effective. In the meantime, we've been doing newsletters, special alerts. You've received some alerts on the vaccination administration's vaccination policy recently. And, of course, the Mulch and Soil Research Foundation, we are seeking to publish that paper on the spontaneous combustion of mulch in landscape and garden applications. That's a full temperature profile study that basically documents that physically cannot happen. There's not enough mass, it can't generate enough heat. And the fire marshals generally say, well, if it does in a big pile, it certainly does in a small pile, and they're missing the whole physics of that relationship, which we have now proven, we documented, and we're trying to get that paper published in a scientific journal for fire safety so that we can say, go there, read that. Until we get it published, it's just our work. Once it's done in a jury journal, then it's accepted at a much higher level, and that's what we're trying to accomplish. Where am I? That's just spontaneous. Does anybody have any questions on the thing? That's just the highlights. There's a lot of things that go on, dealing with consumer complaints, dealing with media issues, et cetera, that are too numerous to really point out, and they don't follow any particular stream other than the jumping worm that had a stream of consciousness behind it. But right now, those are the significant activities for this last year, and it's been a real pleasure to serve the members. And most of these issues come to us through you. You say, I ran into somebody at the state that said this. Why did he say that? We don't know. Well, we'll find out. Actually, last week I got a question of what's the safety of pallets that are underwater in floodwaters, contaminated floodwaters, for a week to 10 days. Don't know the answer to that. Got the answer from Australia, by the way. Interesting. So we have the time to chase these things down when you don't. That's why we're here. So if you have an issue, call us. We're here to help. Any questions? Okay. I mentioned before that we've been working with the state legislative monitoring program. This is something that went through our, we've been working on this to improve it for the last year, and we think we're going to have it fully launched and redone in November, and it can be accessed through the members area of the website, which if you tried to get to it since Thursday, you'll find that you can't get to it because our ISP migrated our whole website to a new server on Thursday. And on Thursday evening, we found out they migrated everything but the database that lets you log in to the members area. So by Saturday, they still hadn't migrated the database over. So as soon as we can get that migration completed and everything relinked, we'll be back to that. But it's going to be probably Monday or Tuesday of next week before we can get that resolved. On the certification program, we have 54 products, premium potting soil certified, 6 standard premium soils, standard potting soils, 59 landscape soils and soil amendments, 3 specialty soils, 176 mulches, and we have 2 applications in process for a total of 300 certified products. And this is up from last year. It's been a challenge. Last year, we couldn't get in the field. The team got out and did 1 circuit out of 5 to collect samples to verify compliance with the program. We usually do 5 circuits. We only did 1, and then COVID hit and travel got locked down. We made accommodations, and we thank all the members who participated by sending in their samples. That's not the preferred way, but it worked. But this year, as soon as we could in March, we went back into the field and the team got there. And it's a challenge if you've been out traveling on the road. Those of you who travel around know that it's not easy to move around the country under the current circumstances. And car rentals and van rentals are expensive and when you can get them. So I want to thank our certification team, Carol Ledbetter and J.C. McGowan. Yeah, I know. But the only other pictures I had, you had wine glasses in name. It may be true, but I didn't want to put it up there. So the certification audit team, they were out. They were grounded in 2020. They started in February this year. They did over 6,000 miles, which is a little less than they normally do, in 5 weeks, collecting over 240 products in 5 regions. So I would just want to thank them for all the work they did. And boy, when you're going down the road and you can stop at McDonald's but you can't go in and use the restroom, that's a challenge. Thank God Home Depot is always open, and we're going there anyway. So next item is our election of directors. Directors serve a 3-year term with 4 seats rotating every year. So we have 12 directors, 3 go off, 3-year terms each, 4 rotate each year. All directors serve without compensation or travel reimbursement. We buy them dinner 1 time each meeting. They meet 4 times a year. So this is a labor of love, and we can't work without them. They work for the betterment of the industry, and it's very selfless work. And a lot of them have put in a lot of time over the years. So we want to thank our current directors, President Jim Weber of Ohio Mulch in Columbus, Ohio, Vice President Byron Morgan of Mountain West Bark in Rexburg, Idaho, Director Mike Lang from Black Mulch Compost in Oxford, Florida, and Director Ron Kane from Kellogg Garden Supply in Ontario, California. Thank you so much for your service for this past 3 years. In the next process, the nominating committee has nominated a new slate for election. We have three of our incumbents seeking to run for reelection, and we have two new candidates because Mike Lang has, after more than 25 years, decided to step aside and make room for new blood on the board. So our traditional method is to give each candidate on the ballot an opportunity to stand, be recognized, so you know who you're voting for, and give a brief statement, et cetera. And then you have a green card that represents your company's vote. It's one vote per company. You cast a ballot for four of the five candidates. The four candidates who get the most votes will be elected. It is a plurality, it's not a majority. And that will be our election procedure. So at this point, we would like to, we're going to start with the incumbents. Jim Weber, if you would rise and be recognized as a candidate. You have a comment?
Yes.
You can come up here if you want.
My name is Jim Weber, owner of Ohio Mulch. I've been on the board for the last 3 years. I've attended all the meetings, quarterly meetings, annual meetings for the last 7 years. And Bob's right. He doesn't give much compensation. It's a free meal every quarter. But he has talked about increasing the compensation by including a pat on the back and a firm handshake. But The board members that are on the board, they're here for one reason. They have the passion for the industry. We all have that. And we all get along and work out issues that come along to the industry. And what's in the best interest of the industry? What's in the best interest of us all? And that's what we work on a regular basis. I brought with me today my wife, Kathy Weber, and my daughter, Elizabeth, and my daughter Stephanie, and she's here with her two twins. I don't know if you saw them run around. Stephanie is also a sponsor, Social Marsh Media. So it's kind of for us. And Tom Carton, he's been coming to the meetings with me for the last 7 years. Every single meeting we've never missed. We enjoy it and just glad to be here. Thank you.
Just a reminder, too, Jim was chairman of the Transportation Committee that led us through the FMCSA and all of that for 3 years. So thank you, Jim. Byron Morgan, Vice President, Mountain West Park. I got that right this time, didn't I?
Yes, sir. Hi guys, my name's Byron with Mountain West Products. Been part of the council for the last, I think it's been 8 years. Held a board seat before I got nominated to the vice president, but been in this industry for 36 years with the same company. Wake up every day hoping to learn something new. A lot of faces out here I love to come and see, and that's part of the reason I joined the council. The other part of the reason I join the council is just the knowledge that comes with everybody here, and wake up every day hoping to learn something, and just enjoy being part of the organization, and hope to continue. So very much appreciate all you guys and everybody that participates in this. It takes us all, and very much appreciate the guy behind me and all the other board of directors that I've served with. It's a great group of guys. So my goal is to continue to come and keep learning. Did you want something, Kimberly?
No, I think Edward.
Did you want to get up and speak?
No.
Okay.
I'm trying to make sure guys or girls.
Oh, yeah, no, Ken. When I say guys, I mean all of us. So, but anyway, I appreciate being part of the organization. I appreciate all you guys that come, and hope to continue. So thank you.
Thank you.
Steve Liffers wanted me to mention him. I don't know why, but Steve.
He's up next year. All right. Next, Ron Kane from Kellogg Garden Supply in Ontario, California.
Hi, I'm Ron with Kellogg. I'm the new guy as of today, so I'm going to have like the shortest if I lose today, which will be fine. I've been in supply chain for well over 30 years, although only in this industry for about a year and a half. I worked for Kellogg for 20 years. I actually ran the smallest factory in Canada and then ran the biggest factory in Southern California. I've been doing it for a real long time. Love transportation. There's not very many people that do. And I love factories. Spent a lot of time learning lean manufacturing, then spent some time with some bigger brands, Monster Energy, and then beer. Beer's fun, too. But the thing I really love about Kellogg and why I joined, I'm a gardener, been doing it for a long time since I was a little kid. And it was a good opportunity, especially joining during COVID, to help teach Kellogg some different things about manufacturing that they just didn't used to work on. They were always really good at keeping up with what they needed. I think most like everybody in this room, COVID threw everybody for a loop, and you've got to get real good at supply chain really fast if you're going to keep up with customer demand. So my biggest hope is to be able to serve on the board and help folks learn some different things around lean manufacturing that can help the industry, but also do what I've been doing over the last year and a half, which is learning from people in our organization and the 25 co-packers that we work with on a regular basis. Thanks.
Thank you, Ron. Larry Deuce of Silver Corp. Now, Larry, at the last moment, wasn't able to participate, come to the meeting because his wife got ill and he couldn't leave her. So his son-in-law, Ben, is here to read a statement from Larry.
First, I just want to begin by thanking the Mulch and Soil Council and everybody that worked on getting this event put together, and all the workers that put everything together. I mean, it's a great time, and it's great for everyone to be able to be here in person. So let's give them a hand. I can also, when I go back and talk to Larry, I can say that he's the reason we didn't hit the record this year for attendance, so I'll have that news to report to him at least. He wanted me to read this letter for you all. To the membership of the Mulch and Soil Council, I'm sorry I could not be at this annual meeting in person with you, but recently my wife has become ill and I need to stay close to home with her. It's not COVID and she is on the mend. Before we had to leave, we actually drove 15 hours to be down here, and his daughters and son are with us. They drove down with us, and my one-year-old boy is with us too. So he really loved the Memphis hotel that so much that he had to be up at 2:30 a.m. last night for a couple hours. So Silva is in its 25th year of business, and we're located in the state of Minnesota, the land of 10,000 lakes and almost as many rioters. We'd like to thank Randy Tyre for suggesting to us some years ago to join the Mulch and Soil Council. We have found this organization to be a valuable link to the industry and a source of very relevant information for growing our business. If Larry is selected to the board, he would be glad to contribute in any way that he can be of service, and he would especially like to work on the newly evolving issue of the jumping worm and the implications that it might have on our industry as things move forward. He says, I hope that you have an inspiring annual meeting so far. Thank you. I got to spread a little special sauce on this situation because Larry's the kind of guy that if you met him in a coffee shop and asked him what he'd do at Silva, he'd say, I sweep the floors. And he'd probably leave it at that. But Larry has been a great leader for me, an inspiration for me, and when he gets into an issue, he digs as deep as he can to understand it, and he stands behind what it is. A couple of things that he has done while he's been in a voluntary role is he has been to as many of the board member meetings as possible just to be in the room, and if he's able to offer suggestions as far as the FMCSA, the ag permit that you get so that you can expand your hours of service, he was a part of that. He's a part of that committee. He attends as many of the meetings as he can, and then this jumping worm situation. We're keeping our eyes on it very closely so it doesn't impact the industry as a whole and get out of hand and hysterical. So thank you, everyone, for listening to me, and appreciate your time.
And Tanya Bird from Grant County Mulch in Petersburg, West Virginia. Tanya.
Good afternoon. I'm Tanya Berg with Grant County Mulch. I've been in the mulching industry for 35 years, and before Steve Liffers calls me out because he thinks I look so young, I'll have to explain myself. My parents, Larry and Janie, started Grant County Mulch 35 years ago, so obviously it's all I know. Very passionate about it. Our parents, there's three daughters, our parents taught us the value of hard work. My father built a grinder on his own because we didn't have any money. He taught my mother to run a loader, so it was a two-man show for many years. We were taught how to run a bagging line. Thanks, Van. I'm not sure where he's at. So it's all we know. I'm very passionate about the industry and enjoy it. I love my job. I love this organization. Bob, you do a great job. And I appreciate the nomination, and thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. All good people, hard decision for you to make, but it's yours to make. So if you would, mark your ballots, vote for any four of the five on the ballot. When you've got your ballot done, hold it up and pass it into the center, and we'll collect it on the aisles. Kimberly, you're going to represent the board and the count. Thank you. If you weren't aware, we were transparent as an organization long before it became fashionable or demanding. We have always had, for decades, open committee meetings. You don't have to be on a committee to participate. If you're in an area where we're having a committee meeting and you want to drop in and sit in and as an observer, you are more than welcome to do so. We invite you to do so. Same is true for board of directors meetings. You're entitled to come. You're a member. We do not hide what we do. We ask for your participation and your input at all times. This is your organization. You should have a voice in it. Tell what party I'm from. Anybody else? All the ballots in? Oh, wait a minute. I just sent Kimberly out, didn't I? I was going to give you an award. In the meantime. All right. Count fast. Okay. Thank you all for participating in the process. Okay, we have a few recognitions that we want to make while they're counting the ballots. Appreciate this opportunity to recognize officially our directors for their service in the last three-year terms. So we have a little memento for our directors. Okay, for Jim Weber, director
27 years ago, I got a phone call while I was in one of these meetings. And when I came back, I'd been elected to the board. So, but it was one of the best things that happened to me in the industry. I was 32 years old and learned a lot from Bob. Learned a lot from a lot of the guys on the board today and previous members. So the main thing I wanted to maybe say was, even if you're on a committee, especially with the larger group today, the board and the organization does more than we actually have to put in. And even when we're arguing, it's for the benefit of the industry. So, thank you.
And so turns another page in history. So, it's been a pleasure, Michael. I have one more award, but we just sent the program chair out to count ballots. So we'll do that when Kimberly comes back. But we do want to recognize Kimberly for all the effort she put in putting together this program for y'all. And, you know, last year it was really difficult to get speakers because no one could travel. And still it's hard to get speakers to commit well in advance, not knowing what mandates are coming and going in the government and in the states, et cetera. So it took quite a bit of effort to put together a quality program, and I think you'll agree that she has achieved that goal and done a yeoman's job, yeoman's person's job. Sorry. I'm cold. I don't think that's acceptable either. But if we're not correct, it's not because we mean to be incorrect. It's because we don't practice it enough. But does anybody have any questions or anything you want to discuss? We've got, I see they're still counting ballots out there. So I don't have the results yet, other than I can skip forward, and the next time and place of the next meeting is going to be October 4 to 6, 2022, at the Hilton Charlotte Center City in Charlotte, North Carolina. That was supposed to be last year's meeting, but we did what the industry calls a lift and shift. We lifted it up out of 2020 and shifted it to 2022. They actually couldn't do it in 2021. And Memphis was our 2022 site, and we did a lift and shift there and rolled it back to this year. So we have the results. So thank you all for your participation. I'm pleased to announce the results of the election, and you certify these. It's not just my staff counting. We're under supervision. Jim Weber, reelected to office and as president, remains president his term. Byron Morgan, reelected to office for another 3 years, and this will be 21 to 24. Ron Kane, reelected to office. And Tanya Berg, congratulations, Tanya, elected. You were elected. Congratulations. Okay. We've already picked our meeting dates for the board meetings for 2022. Try to get them in on the calendar well in advance so we don't get conflicts. So I'll share those with you. Every rest of the board members have them. Oh, and Kimberly, I would like to recognize you for all the work that you have done in putting together this outstanding program under these terrible circumstances. I can't express how much it's important to have member participation. We cannot do this job and serve you well without your help. We're here to serve you. So if we're doing something that you don't like, you need to tell us. If we're not doing something you think would be a benefit, you need to tell us. Tell any board member. You've seen them all. Tell any staff member. We're here to make life better for the industry and our members. Non-members if we have to, but members. And we do follow the rule. Members can call us anytime. Members can call us the first time. Our non-members can call us the first time. And then if we can't tell you and convince you to join, we'll keep after you. Again, next year's meeting is the Hilton Charlotte Center City in Charlotte, North Carolina. It will be in October, October 6th to 7th. A little later. If there's no other items to come before the membership, then we'll take a motion to adjourn. Who? Brad? Byron? Second? Any discussion? Well, adjourn doesn't get as discussion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed? We are adjourned. Thank you so much. Our opening reception will be in the exhibit room in the Hernando de Soto room, which is over there, and it's sponsored by Vermeer. So thank you, Vermeer, for your participation and your sponsorship at tonight's event.